Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and one of the most important segments that we did this summer was our interview with Brooklyn Assemblyman Hakeem Jeffries about his efforts to convert the many unfinished and unsold luxury housing developments throughout the city into affordable housing. And it's an obvious question. Why, with homeless shelters near capacity and so many middle and working class families struggling with rent and mortgage payments, are their buildings sitting empty? We even launched a web mapping project of our own to follow up on the segment using Assemblyman Jeffrey's census of the halted developments in his Brooklyn district as a start. You can find a link to our halted development map on our show page, and you've heard us talk about it. And I encourage you to keep looking around your own neighborhoods and post what you find. Our halted development map is still very active. And we thought this would be a good time to invite Assemblyman Jeffries back to check in on his proposal, which he's calling Project Reclaim. Assemblyman, welcome back to the show.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And just remind us of the basics. How many buildings were on your original list of halted developments, which were, of course, just in your Brooklyn Assembly District?
Absolutely. Just in the neighborhoods of Fort Greene, Clinton Hill, Prospect Heights, parts of Crown Heights, and Bedford-Stuyvesant, we did a block-by-block survey and found that there were 66 luxury condominium-type developments that were either under construction, completed but totally unoccupied, or completed and only partially occupied with substantial vacancy rates.
And has any of that been made into affordable housing?
None of them have been made into affordable housing right now, but we have made substantial progress with respect to the Project Reclaim initiative. Perhaps the most important step that we have taken, Brian, is to convince the state and the CEO of the state housing agency portfolios, Priscilla Almodovar, that it's necessary for the state to aggressively intervene and create a set of tools that can be used to transform some of these buildings from luxury to affordable.
A set of tools. So how complicated is the process?
Well, in order to accomplish widespread transformation, which I think is necessary in order to keep New York City and the communities that I represent affordable for working families and middle-class folks, what's necessary is that we dramatically change the terms of the underlying financial transactions initially conceived of as luxury buildings, refinance the loans on a wide-scale basis so that these buildings can be put onto the market as affordable. That's going to involve substantial concessions by the developers, but in many cases, they have no choice. The market doesn't exist for the luxury condominiums that they were building. But in particular, we're going to need the cooperation of the banks, the financial institutions, which are going to have to refinance these loans from luxury to affordable.
And does it matter what kind of, what stage, really, these buildings are in? Because our halted development map uses different colored pushpins to designate whether a building is under construction, completed but empty, or partially occupied. So is your Project Reclaim aimed at all three cases?
We're targeting all three categories. But it's become clear to me that the most obvious category to transform buildings with a great degree of immediacy are the buildings that are completed but totally unoccupied. And in fact, of those 66, we have several that fall into that category. And many, Brian, have already either been seized back by the banks or the foreclosure process has started. And those are the buildings that we're targeting aggressively now because the banks have an incentive to work with us, the government, to make those loans workable so that we can fill those apartments and then we can create the affordability we need.
So can you be a human pushpin on our halted development map and pinpoint maybe one of those buildings in particular and tell us its story?
Absolutely. Well, 525 Clinton, a building that I know you're familiar with. It's a large glass tower in the Clinton Hill section of the neighborhood and has experienced some problems during the construction process, but now is largely complete, has been on the market for several months, probably has been advertised for in excess of a year. Nothing has been sold in the building. I believe there are 60 units in the building, large two-bedroom, three-bedroom apartments. I believe there may be some studios. That building is in severe financial distress. I believe the $25 million loan that was taken out on the building, there's been a default on it. The bank is TD Bank. We're trying to talk with TD Bank to convince them that you have a distressed asset. You're unlikely to recover on that initial loan. In fact, your own actions have indicated that because you've launched a foreclosure proceeding. And so what's necessary here, we believe, is that we figure out how to get TD Bank to refinance that loan, put the building in the hands of either a not-for-profit affordable housing developer or a for-profit affordable housing development company, so we can either rent or sell those units at an affordable rate.
Who are the neighbors around there?
Well, you have several combination of folks who live in that area. You have some brownstone owners. You have people who are renting in rent-stabilized apartments in the building that's right next door. It's the traditional mix that you find in Fort Greene, Clinton Hill, working families, middle-class folks, and seniors.
I ask because I got an unsolicited critique of this whole idea yesterday from a local merchant, a store I was in down here around the station in Lower Manhattan. He did not know who I am. He did not know about this project or you. I did not raise the issue. And yet he launched into this thing with me about halted development and the push to convert some of these unoccupied luxury condos to affordable housing. And he said, I don't want this because the property values, the low crime, various things that he cited about his neighborhood, he didn't want to change. And he was afraid that if people were brought in for affordable housing that was, you know, not consistent with the property values in the neighborhood, and I think other things that he thinks go along with that, then it would change the nature of the neighborhood in a way that he doesn't want the government to impose upon him. Have you heard that before?
Well, I have heard those type of themes articulated from some, and I think it's an unfortunate critique of an initiative designed to preserve essentially the racial, socioeconomic, and cultural diversity of a vibrant community. And when you say affordable, we're talking about a scale of low income, working families, moderate income, and in fact, middle class folks who desperately need housing in New York City.
So in the case of 525 Clinton, for example, if this was developed as luxury condos, you're not talking about $400 a month Section 8 rental housing, right?
Right.
Rather what?
Well, you're talking about folks, conceivably, in my view, we need municipal workforce housing in the city of New York. A teacher and a police officer, for instance, who are married, they can't afford to live in the communities that I represent. We need housing for these folks, social workers, nurses, as well as, you know, people who are struggling at the low-income aspect of the economic strata. But we
but
need
therefore that what? Is that rental? Was that supposed to be market-rate rental housing or condos
that was,
for sale?
Well, the original vision was condos for sale. Targeting, you know, people who could afford $600,000, $700,000, $800,000 two-bedroom apartments. And that, you know, to some degree, obviously the developers have overshot the market. And so the critique of you'd rather have a building sit vacant, fall into foreclosure, what that does is that reduces the property values
so
of people.
So why wouldn't they
community.
Sell it for maybe $200,000 in an apartment or whatever the market would bear? Why do they need the government to come in and say, look, this is what's going to get you back on your feet?
Well, you know, unfortunately, I think you have some developers who are of the view that they'd rather hold out,
sit tight
until the market returns. And this is why I think something that Barack Obama has said is important, the fierce urgency of now. Those of us who are interested in maintaining, you know, socioeconomic diversity and affordability in the city of New York have to act now while the banks and the developers are in a financially precarious position. I'm under no illusions. They're not benevolent, right? But they are in a position now where they have an incentive to act because they're in a tough financial situation and the market is so poor.
Assemblyman Hakeem Jeffries of Brooklyn talking about his project Reclaim to turn vacant luxury housing into affordable housing in the recession, and connected to our halted development map, which you can see and contribute to at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And you mentioned Priscilla Almodovar earlier and the State Housing Finance Agency, and they are working on a different proposal to subsidize mortgages. And the city council speaker, Christine Quinn, has her own plan. Is everybody working together on this, or are you all trying to come at the same problem in different ways?
Well, we absolutely are working together, and in fact, the things that have been devised by Priscilla Almodovar came as a result of a conversation that we had in July, where I stressed that the state really needed to aggressively intervene. And with respect to Christine Quinn's initiative, I mean, it's an important initiative designed to provide some level of subsidy. I believe she's managed to secure $20 million. Everyone needs to work on this problem together, both the city, the state, as well as the federal government. In fact, Brian, and the federal government and our elected officials there can be very instrumental in helping to convince some of these banks to do the right thing, banks that have been bailed out by the generosity of the taxpayers and now are in a position to help circulate our money back into the economy by refinancing these bad loans into loans that could produce affordable housing.
Assemblyman Hakeem Jeffries, we have about 4 minutes left, and I want to touch three other things. The Times wrote, and I saw where you commented on the story, that black political power in New York is shifting from Harlem to Brooklyn and Southeast Queens. Is this all because of David Patterson's and Charlie Rangel's current problems or larger trends?
Well, I think it's the result of a larger demographic trend where essentially the black electorate and the heart of the black population no longer lives in Harlem and in Upper Manhattan, but in fact is in Central Brooklyn, East Brooklyn, Southeast Queens, and in many parts of the Bronx. And so quite naturally, as the electorate has shifted, the influence of the elected leadership has shifted to these outer borough communities. What's going to be important, I think, is that as that transformation takes place and as our relevance increases, are we able to make a meaningful difference in the lives of our constituents? Otherwise, it's just influence for influence's sake.
And is this just about the shift of influence geographically, or is there a different issues-oriented agenda that comes out of Brooklyn and Queens and out of Harlem?
Well, you know, it is interesting. I think that there are certain issues that Bedford-Stuyvesant has in common with Harlem, but there's also a view that the outer borough neighborhoods, particularly under this recent administration, have been largely ignored. And there's a Manhattan-centric approach that many of us in the outer boroughs feels often exists with respect to public policy issues, be that affordable housing, health care, or education. And so we believe the shift will hopefully result in making a meaningful difference in the lives of our constituents.
You're in the Assembly. What's your take on Governor Patterson's brand-new proposed budget cuts with the deficit still out there? Necessary evil, or are you going to criticize it?
Well, he has put forth some tough choices, and I commend him, you know, for taking the initiative at this point. It took a little bit to get to this point, but I'm not convinced that everything that he's put into the budget is necessary for us to do, and that we should not simply cut things, but we also have to look at some form of revenue enhancement, whether that's considering the possibility of a SOTA tax, which has health benefits, whether that's considering the possibility of increasing out-of-state tuition for SUNY students so that it's consistent with what out-of-state students pay in California or Michigan or Virginia. I think there's a mix of things that we can do so as to minimize the cuts to education and health care.
And last thing, what about Hiram Montserrat? I realize you're in the Assembly, not the Senate, but by being found not guilty of a felony, though he was convicted of misdemeanor assault of his girlfriend, he's not automatically expelled from the Senate. In your opinion, should he be expelled from the state legislature for even misdemeanor domestic violence?
I don't think that that's for me to say whether he should be expelled or not. There's going to be an election that takes place next year. There's a significant possibility that he's going to be challenged by someone who's very credible, and the voters will have that opportunity. I do think that the Senate leadership is right to consider some form of disciplinary action, however.
Disciplinary action short of expulsion will be taken by some as soft on domestic violence. Would you be concerned about that?
That's possible, but we do live in a democracy, and I think ultimately the opportunity should be created for the voters in that community to decide whether given the acquittal on some charges, the conviction on another is sufficient for the voters to expel Hiram Montserrat from office.
New York State Assemblyman Hakeem Jeffries, on his halted development project, trying to convert vacant luxury housing into affordable housing, and the other issues that we brought up. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.